Chandra, is it?
Yes.
In that purport, yeah.
So after the studying, of the teachings of Muhammad and his activities in the Quran itself, it is hard to believe that he is the devotee of the Lord and that the teachings are actually from the same divine source. The New Agers like to take parts of the religious books which suit their agenda of oneness, but should we as Vaishnavas do the same?
Wait a minute, it's another question, isn't it? What's the relation?
Another relation, well, you could say it's another question, yes.
About Muhammad, it's a difficult question. Definitely the Muslims have a very strong sense of Allah. Many of them, their faith is very strong, and their commitment. But it's not a very high understanding. And some of the things Muhammad did don't seem to be on the level of pure devotion. But we also have Turumangai Alva, some of the things he did, they wouldn't fit the standard of, we wouldn't recommend for all of you, killing people and stealing their Buddha deity and melting it down. So, in this regard, I think we can accept this statement. Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur actually said this first, as far as I understand, about Jesus and Muhammad. So we can take it as a case of Vaishnavera Kriya Mudra Vigeha Nabhujai. Maybe that's what he had to do. But it is a difficult one to understand. There's talk of him having some kind of sexual relationships with his 8-year-old wife. And this and that. It's a bit strange to say the least. And there was deity worship going on in the Arabic religions, and he stopped all of that. He, except the Kaaba, which some people say is a Shiva Linga. Maybe they get Shakti from that. But we don't know. How can we know? It's a rumor. How can you know? You can't say for sure. Definitely they get some Shakti, but then exactly how, where, we don't know. We find in the Bhagavatam 8th canto that at one point in the time, well, let's discuss, due to the influence of time, the demons got power, and then the demigods are advised not to fight now, and in due course of time, their power, the time will change, and then the demigods will get power. So it definitely seems like a Kali Yuga religion. It's philosophically, it's not on a high level. In fact, in Christianity and Islam and Judaism, there's a major fault, at least in the mainstream of these religions, a major fault right at the beginning of understanding. They don't know the difference between the soul and the body, and they don't accept reincarnation. So that's a major misunderstanding on the basis of which they say you only have one life, and if you don't follow what we say, you go to hell forever, which makes God look like a really vindictive kind of person. Vindictive, you know what that means? It means spiteful or nasty, more generally. And in general, yeah, in Christianity, you see in the Bible, there's not much philosophy. There is in that one, what is it, Ecclesiastes? There's a lot of negativity about the material world, the whole book. But in general, Jesus, he didn't speak much philosophy. Moral teachings, more like that. And he's recorded as having said that there are many things to tell you, but I cannot, you're not fit to hear them. That's there in the Bible. So they are very influential. But strongly influenced by tamaguna, the mode of ignorance. Some idea of God is there. And the fact that there is some idea of God gives, we can understand, at least I could understand, how helpful that is when I was trying to preach in Thailand, which is a hardcore Buddhist country. It's Theravada Buddhism. There's Theravada, which is the people who follow Mahayana, they call Hinayana. Yana means, you know, vehicle. So Hina and Maha, so it's a derogatory term to call it Hinayana. But Theravada, Vad, you know, so the teachings, and Theravada, the teachings of the elders, they call it. So in Mahayana Buddhism, there's lots of worship of different gods, so to speak. Well, they're not exactly, they don't well, gods, yes, but no God. No big capital G God. That's not there at all. But in Theravada, no. They don't worship gods. But what they... I spent time in Thailand, and the main religion there, actually, Thailand is a hardcore Theravada Buddhist country. You'll find in the southern area where there are Buddhists, that means Sri Lanka, Thailand, Laos, Cambodia, Vietnam, all these countries, they're dominated by Theravada Buddhism. And then if you go further north, Tibet, China, Japan, they're Mahayana. So the main religion there, which people actually practice in Thailand, is ghost worship. Chinese also big on ghost worship. Spirit worship, they call it. And also well known in Thailand are the Hindu deities. They worship Brahma. We say in Pushkar, we're saying that Brahma is not worship, but in Thailand, they call Prabhum. Prat means Sri, and Brahm means Brahma. And they know Pakisana means Sri Krishna. And who else? Pa'in means Indra, like that. So especially Brahma is much worshipped. But the concept of there being a god is not there at all. And I was saying, very concept of a supreme controller is not there. The transcendent supreme controller is not there. So it's very difficult to teach them Krishna consciousness because they don't even have an idea. Just like if 100 years ago, we're going back in a time machine and we tell people that we have a recorder, a mini recorder, Zoom. The company name is Zoom, is it? And they know what you're talking about. It'd be difficult to explain to them even. No, there's no word. Right. There's no word for God. So at least that much is there in Christianity and in Islam. Islam, the concept tends to be highly impersonal. They're very much against the idea of God being a person at all. In Christianity, especially, in Christianity there are three main groups. There is, by far the biggest is Roman Catholic. And then the second grouping is what they call the Eastern Orthodox Church, which broke off from the Catholic Church. And some are reunited, they're in communion with them. They're separate, but they're close with the Catholic Church. And then that's the Syrian Church, the Coptic Church, and biggest is the Russian Church, the Greek Church. Now they made the Ukrainian Church because they don't want to be under Russia. Or maybe that was there before also. So that's very similar to... Now in these two, which are the original, they came from original Christianity, they worship... they don't call them deities. In the Catholic religion in which I was raised, they call them statues. of Jesus and Mary and different, and they have many saints who they worship. The saint of travel is Saint Christopher. The patron saint of England is Saint George. The patron saint of Ireland is Saint Patrick. The patron saint of Poland is
Mother Mary.
Oh,
she's the queen of Poland.
The queen of Poland, I see. And they have the patron saint of carpenters is Saint Joseph, the father, kind of Jesus. And there's patron saint for everything. So they're like demigods. The concept is like demigods. So you have God and demigods, and they have, not exactly, but similar to that. And then they have so many saints, and they have festivals to celebrate all this. So that's both in the Russian Orthodox Church, they're very big on icons, which are paintings of Jesus and Mary and the saints and this and that, which they worship. So they have a sense of personalism. But in the Protestant churches, they're usually very plain, deliberately, and they don't have any iconography. It means they don't have any paintings or statues like that. So it's very much more impersonalistic. And they, another thing in the Catholic Church, which is very strong, is the sense of submission to the Pope. You have to learn through the Pope, through the priests and the bishops, and ultimately the Pope. Whereas in the Protestant tradition, they emphasize reading the Bible. It's me, the Bible, and Jesus, and that's it. And they're not supposed to believe in any intercessionary. That means someone in between us, and there's someone in between. You just read the Bible and then you pray to God or whatever. Although they do actually have spiritual, many of them do have spiritual guides. It's all very complicated, and no two people are the same. But we find that those who are Catholics and from Orthodox traditions, they can accept Krishna consciousness much more easily than those from Protestant traditions. Because in Protestants, they're against iconography. They don't believe in any authority like a guru. And they tend to be quite impersonal, because no iconography and no fun, no joy. It's very heavy. They emphasize very much burning in hell. Well, that's in there in the Catholic tradition. It's a whole big thing. I guess you don't have to know so much about it in Salem, but Christianity is creeping up everywhere. And most Christian, what I just told you about Christianity, probably 99.9% of the Christians in the world wouldn't know these things. That there are. At least Catholics wouldn't know that there are Orthodox churches, there are so many of them, in communion with the Roman Catholic Church and the Russian Church. They have iconography. They'll just know what they see in their own tradition. And they mostly don't care to understand much about it. Most people, for them, it's religion is something, if there is something in their life, but nothing much, not that much, like Hindus. Something is there, but not too much. It depends in different places. In Poland, a lot of people still take it seriously. In Ireland, they used to. They lost it now. They did a real turnaround in less than one generation.
In Poland, it seems to be changing also in some ways, but still people go to church. And the Pope comes there, like millions of them to bring.
Oh, did either of the last two popes come, Francis and Benedict? When John Paul II once he went, he was the first pope in so many years, because after they got free from the communism, then no one went until John Paul II went. So and he was Polish, right? So that was a huge thing. So there's definitely a sense of God consciousness. In Islam also, there's a sense of God consciousness, but so far we've seen it's difficult to make devotees. We haven't really tried that much. There is a sense of fanaticism, which tends to be strong in, especially Protestant Christianity and in Islam. But then again, these are all very general statements. Bengali Muslims, traditionally they're not very fanatical. Kerala Muslims now, because so many go to the Gulf and they get Wahhabized. Then did you tell them about Wahhabi Islam?
Actually, no, I didn't talk.
That you should talk about. Because any educated person would know about that. Maybe not in India, because they don't care about these things. But if you read something like the New York Times, then they'll use the word Wahhabi, and it's just expected people will know what it means. So maybe you should speak about that. Bhaktivinoda Thakur wrote about that in one of his writings, talking about fanatical Wahhabis at that time, the 19th century, or maybe his early 20th century. He wrote in English about that. So yeah, what else is there? What was the question? Oh, how can we think that they're representatives of God?
Especially the Quran, although there is lots of propaganda that is, you know, Islam is a religion of peace, but actually there are a lot of...
Interpretation is very important also. There are moderate Muslims who say that historically the violent parts of the Quran came first, that was required at the beginning, and then the peaceful parts came later. It's interpretation also. Although Islam spread rapidly after the death of Muhammad, and a lot of it was by the sword also, all over.
That's what they get from the Quran itself. And also
this term jihad, which has also entered the English language, that was traditionally that was understood to be a spiritual fight, an internal fight against the bad things within the heart. That was the general understanding, as far as I know. But Wahhabism brought it out that we have to kill the infidels and all this and that. The history of Islam in India is not a very peaceful one overall. I mean, they did a lot of slaughter and destruction. Again, it's mixed because Akbar was praised as being very tolerant and broad-minded. Aurangzeb, not at all. Then?
Yeah, another thing is that...
How can we say that they're coming from Krishna? Well, everyone gets their power from Krishna. Just like Hiranyakashipu asked Prahlad, where do you get your power from? He said, I get my power from the same source as you do. But it doesn't mean that everyone's a saint. Hiranyakashipu wasn't a saint. He got power from Krishna, but... he wasn't a saint, just the opposite. So definitely Muhammad and Christ had some role to play in the world. Their influence has been tremendous. Christ somehow became big, because there were so many people like that wandering around that area at that time, preaching various things, religious things. And, well, it was Paul who made Jesusism big, actually, by inventing Christianity. Did you teach them that Christianity was invented by Saint Paul, who never saw Jesus, and he eclipsed the original 11 and a bit apostles. There are all kinds of things. It's difficult to say exactly because it's so far in the past and there are no clear records. Then?
Yeah, in preaching or teaching people, sometimes the Lord is saying that.
Oh, one thing I should say also is that certainly there are things that we can criticize in these various religions, but in general, people who take to Islam or Christianity, they may do so just because mostly people because they're born in a certain family which professes a certain religious path, but the general sense is that I want to be good. That feeling is there. If you're going to be a good Muslim, then you should be generous to the poor. You should be kind in your dealings with others. That general feeling is there, isn't it? That we see. I'm asking you again because you grew up in Poland, but people who are more into Christianity, you expect them to actually make an effort to be. Or they actually try to mold their character to be good. At least that's expected. And that was also one of the sources of my disillusionment in my childhood with Christianity, because I saw people who were supposed to be Christians, but they weren't. But who made a big thing about being Christians, but about themselves being Christians, but they weren't. Their character didn't match up to it. But that is a general sense. Then again, atheists will say, well, you don't need that to be good. It's a complex tapestry. Then?
In teaching or preaching, sometimes the devotees use the argument that all religions are the same.
All religions are the same. Devotees sometimes say that.
The New Age people also say
all religions are the same. But it's not really that all religions are the same. Srila Prabhupada said that actual religion is one, to know God and to surrender to Him, to love Him. And various religions, they can be, under their level, can be understood to what extent they reify that, or they practically show that. But Prabhupada would often say, if God is one, then how can religion be two? There's only one actual religion. But conventionally we say there are so many religions. If you say all religions are the same, then why are you trying to convince someone to be Krishna conscious? Who says that all religions are the same? Our devotees?
Yeah, you can hear that. In essence, it's the same. So the
yeah, in essence, it's the same. Yeah, but but there are differences in not only in external manifestations of it, but there are differences in levels also. And of course, within each religious path, there will be levels. That just like there are saints in the Catholic tradition. Actually, I read quite a lot of a huge book before I joined the movement called Lives of the Saints, which has, as you said, obvious, Christian, Catholic book. I'll tell you the truth, I wasn't that much impressed by many of them. Even at, I was, how old at that age? Maybe 17 or something like that. And that was my subjective opinion at the time. It seemed that quite a lot of them were made into saints because they were good administrators in the church, bishops or something like that. Or they were kind and they helped people and this and that, but actual God consciousness, closeness to God, it didn't strike me that many of them were even striving for that. But again, that's just my subjective opinion going back 45 years or so.
Another question. Srila Prabhupada said many times that following Jesus would result in God
consciousness. Srila Prabhupada said that following Jesus would result in God consciousness.
Yet the Bible has been changed and the whole process totally distorted by the Christians. Even theology is largely a speculation and or manipulation. How can this be done?
Why don't I read it? Because it will come here. Following Jesus would result in God consciousness, Prabhupada said. Yet the Bible has been changed and the whole process totally distorted by the Christians. Even its theology is largely a speculation or manipulation. How can this be then a beneficial and authorized process of connecting one to God? Well, Srila Prabhupada, he also often said, if you're actually a Christian, then why don't you follow Christ? And then he would bring out the point of, why are you killing? In the Old Testament, actually, in the Mosaic Law, the Ten Commandments, well, that's the central of that. Ten Commandments given to Moses, which every Christian's supposed to know, and Jew, I suppose. One of them is, thou shalt not kill. And Prabhupada would say that that means you shouldn't kill unnecessarily, including animals. But it was Saint Augustine who made a lot of the theology or the teachings of Christianity as we know it, said that, well, that doesn't apply to animals because they don't have any intelligence, any developed intelligence. So God gave them to us so that we can kill them. Big saint. It has been changed, and Prabhupada would say that if you're actually following Jesus, then you have to stop killing animals. And then Augustine said, and then he also gave the argument. It's not a new argument. If you say you don't kill animals, if you say that, he criticized this Origen, who said that you shouldn't kill animals. But he said, then why not? What about killing plants? Then, if you want to take it that literally, then you shouldn't kill plants. He used that same argument. And when that was brought to Prabhupada, he said, yeah, that's the law of the world, jivo jivasya jivanam. But the term used in the Bhagavatam is nati hingsa, not excessive violence, not more than required. That is the practical understanding of ahimsa, non-violence. Srila Prabhupada said that he encouraged Christians to be good Christians. If they are serious about following that, then certainly they are going to have some level of God consciousness. I believe that Srila Prabhupada in saying that was being practical also, in as much as you can't really expect a committed Christian to have a complete change. But you can encourage them to do what they're doing better. And if they listen to Prabhupada, it may be that people who are committed Christians may become committed devotees also. In Italy, the devotees used to go selling Prabhupada's books. If they go in any village, the first place they'd go is to the church and the monastery and the nunnery, because they'd always buy all the books. They're very interested in the books because they're interested in God. They've dedicated their life for God at their level of understanding. And I heard that at some point in time, sometimes they'd invite the devotee into the church to give the speech on Sunday. One time, devotee told me he was invited into the church, and he was the priest said, "You listen to what this man says. He knows much more about God than I do." But apparently, at some point in time, the word came from the Vatican warning everyone, "Don't just stop this."
It happened in Poland also.
The priests were taking some.
He would go inside the churches. He used to do those festivals and meet people. So he was also invited to some churches to speak. But then the priest was removed by
the priest was removed,
and then it was banned. So yes, the individuals sometimes they are very positive. And
I was told some years ago that in the Russian Orthodox Church, one monk said to one of our devotees, he said that privately so many of our monks are reading your books, and we know that this is the best path, but we can't say. there's actually tremendous scope for preaching if we do it intelligently and organizedly all over the world. So does it connect one to, does Christianity connect one to God? Yes, I would say so, according to the level of sincerity, because even if the process is mixed up, then Krishna also, he manifests himself to people in as much as they're sincere.
But we apply the same principle to, like within Krishna consciousness, we have apasampradaya, so the ritvis or whatever, can we say that?
Yeah, I would say the same thing, in as much as people are sincere. But in some of the apasampradayas of Bengal, it's institutionalized insincerity. Just like they have the Sakhi Bakis, men dress up as gopis. They should know better than to think that by their material body, with some hairy male body, and Sakhi Bai means men dress up as women and think that they've become gopis. So that's institutionalized insincerity. So that's something different. Ritvikism also. Most of the people who come to Ritvikism, they don't know the difference. It's just that someone came and said this is the way to do it, and they don't go very deeply. But if they're chanting the holy names, they're developing some feelings for Krishna, that won't go in vain. Shaktyavesha avatar, or any avatar, comes to this material world with the purpose of delivering the pious and killing the miscreants. The Shaktyavesha avatars don't necessarily come to the world for the purpose of killing the miscreants. Not necessarily. Uplifting the pious, yeah, to some extent. Prithu Maharaj, his main... He was the Shaktyaveshavatar of Palana Shakti. So his main purpose was for ruling the kingdom. And within that position, he lifted the people to Krishna consciousness. Otherwise, he was empowered like that. And just like any king, pious king can be, he's representative of God, as stated in the Bhagavad Gita, chapter 10. Anyone? I'll say Naranam Cha Niradipam. Okay, you got it. Among men I am the king, Krishna says. So the king is representative of God, as much as he represents God. If he actually does it, acts according to dharma. How did Jesus fulfill that mission if instead of killing the miscreants, he was killed by them? Oh, I see. Well, yeah, but that's what I'm saying. Not all the Shaktyavesha avatars are meant for killing. Probably most of them aren't. It's a misunderstanding. Some say the black stone in Makkah is actually a Shiva linga. Maybe. I don't know. I don't know if there's anyone in the world who knows. Most of the Muslims, they'd all say no. There may be a few Hindus who say yes, but who knows actually? Whether previously it was a Shiva linga, who can say? They may bring out some so-called evidence and this and that. Who can say? But one thing I don't know, they say you shouldn't worship only Allah. Then why do they, practically they worship the Kaaba, they do parikrama around the other way to the way the Hindus do, keeping their left side instead of their right side. And then they kiss that, and that's supposed to be very auspicious to do so. So practically, it's, but they say, no, we don't worship. It's only it's only symbolic. But then the Hindus also say that. That it's only symbolic. We don't say that, but most Hindus say that. So there are so many things, if we get into it.
In Christianity, in Catholicism, they explain that the difference between iconography and idol worship is that we don't see this as God, but the medium through which...
Right, they say the statue is only a statue. There's nothing really there, but still they offer candles and pray. And as far as the people are concerned, that is... When they have a statue of Mary, as far as they're concerned, they're praying to Mary. But if you ask them, they'll say it's just a statue. It's a bit difficult to understand, actually, because they pray with a lot of seriousness and a lot of earnestness.
Yeah, the idea is that it's a statue to help your mind to focus on Mary, but not that Mary is within the statue.
Like, sounds like what the Hindus say about the gods.
And she's somewhere else. You pray to her, but this helps. So it's a medium through which you praise God or...
That's what I heard when I was a kid also. It's not really there, it's just a statue.
But
people take very seriously the statue. Yes. And if you were to vandalize just some statue in someone's garden, like a garden gnome, you know they have these? Garden gnome, they're like... they're little statues people put in their gardens of like Snow White and the Seven Dwarfs.
Yes.
So gnomes are like dwarves. So if you go in someone's garden and with a hammer and smash the head off of that, people won't think it's good because you're destroying someone's property, but they'll just think it's vandalism. But if you were to do that in the church to the statue of Mary, they'd be very, very upset.
Yes.
More than if you did to the garden gnome, right? So that makes you think that actually they do take it more seriously than just a statue. There was this film, Oh My God, came out in Bollywood about 4 or 5 years ago, in which they were against Hindu religion and saying worship of deities is wrong. But then and in the film they had someone with an iron bar knock the head off a statue, but they didn't do of any deity that's worshipped, like Sai Baba or Shiva or something. In the story, the man was supposed to have died, but he didn't die, and after he died they made a statue and started worshipping him as God. Then he came, he wasn't actually dead, and he spoke against this deity worship. He got an iron bar and hit the head off of this statue. And I just thought that they did this, they wanted to make that point, but they didn't dare to do it with a statue of Sai Baba or Krishna, because they would have had too much outcry if they had done that. So they made their point that it's just a statue, but they didn't. They did it with some unknown person they made into a statue. Okay. Anything else just now?
How to understand the story of Adam and Eve?
How to understand the story of Adam and Eve? There's no real need to try and understand it at all. Why do you want to understand it?
Because the story is mentioned in Bhavishya Purana.
The story is mentioned in Bhavishya Purana, so we're told.
So
by people who want to, by Christians maybe, who want to say that it's... They say all kinds of things.
It says here,
the Bhavishya Purana is highly interpolated, so we're told.
Yeah,
nothing from the Bhavishya Purana is taken. No, nothing from the Bhavishya Purana, none of the predictions are taken seriously, because whatever anyone wants to say that's happened, then something happens and then they write it in the Bhavishya Purana and say, see, it's already predicted. It's something like, So like Nostradamus, he gives all these predictions, no one can understand them. They're so cryptic, and then after something happens, they say, see, Nostradamus predicted it. But no one could say before it happened that Nostradamus had predicted it. They're very cryptic.
Here it says that in the question that, that Prabhupada, in some conversation, he said that everything is accurate there.
Everything in the Bhavishya Purana is accurate, yeah, but that doesn't mean that the interpolations are part of the Bhavishya Purana. Everything in Srimad Bhagavatam is correct, but if you bring out an addition saying that my great-grandmother was an incarnation of Durga, just because you put it in there doesn't make it part of the Srimad Bhagavatam.
Some people call it the Devi Bhagavatam.
Devi Bhagavat, yeah, that's another. Well, at least our Acharya, they reject that as a complete fabrication. They mostly took all the stories from the Srimad Bhagavatam and twisted them around to show. Even it should be Devi Bhagavata, right? Because female. How can it be Devi Bhagavata? It's not mentioned in the list of the Puranas. Which Shastra is that? Is that Kurma Purana or Matsya Purana? It gives a list of 18 Puranas. Matsya Purana. And it's in, Devi Bhagavata's not there. Seems to be something recent out of Kerala. Yeah, then? Dimensions of good and evil. Something coming from Sahodra Swami.
Yes.
Maha brain. I can't say if I can comment on anything he said.
He says that it is the opinion of some scholars that the Bhavishya Purana is interpolated. However, during a conversation on 2nd April 1977...
Most academic scholars, at least, for all it's worth, say that the Bhavishya Purana is interpolated. And definitely anything about that seems to be about Jesus in any of the Vedic scriptures, we could highly likely it's been put in there by Christians for their own missionary propaganda. But I would say if it says about Jesus, they also say about Muhammad is in Bhavishya Purana. Say, well, okay, if you accept the Shastra, then accept it fully. Krishna's two Bhagavan Swayam. Why do you just accept one or two lines from some obscure part of the Shastra? Just like you criticize Krishna, he's dancing with other people's wives. Where do you get that from? It's from Srimad Bhagavatam. So why don't you accept that he's the Supreme Personality of Godhead? That's also in Srimad Bhagavatam. Yeah, so I just answered that right. If Prabhupada said everything in there is correct. But that doesn't mean that interpolations are correct. Do you know the word interpolation, what it means? It means that there's a book. I've written a book by Bhaktivikasa Swami. And someone comes and makes a new edition, putting something in that he added, as if it's my writing. Just like I wrote Sri Bhaktisiddhanta Vaibhava. And then someone reprints an edition saying that he used to eat Vadilal ice cream every day and prints it as if it's a fact. Of course, it probably wasn't Vadilal ice cream at the time, and you've never heard of it. It's in Gujarat. It's in Gujarat, Vadilal ice cream. So you see his evidence. It's in Bhaktisiddhanta Vaibhav, so it's bona fide for us to eat Vadilal ice cream. But that's not what I wrote. That's an interpolation. Prakshipt, the term Madhvacharya uses in relation to Mahabharata. He says, ati prakshipt. highly interpolated. And therefore he made his Mahabharata Tatparya Nirnay to straighten things out, give the proper understanding. All right, I think I'll call this little session to an end here. Hare Krishna. If you're interested to learn so many things, when you've read all of Prabhupada's books three times, there are other things you can read also. I have a big book, it's in Nandagram, this thick and this high, called The Faith, about the history of Christianity. Quite interesting. In some ways I was disappointed because it's by Brian Moynihan, good Irish sounding name. In some ways I was disappointed, it's very well written, but I was disappointed because I thought there might be some more of the ideological discussions and debates, but mostly the impression I got is mostly Christians killing each other and killing non-Christians. That's mostly what, just in chapter after chapter, just killing, killing, killing. I can lend that to you one, if you want. You want to read that? It's quite a big read. Take quite a few hours to get through it all. Then you have the history of the Cathars and the Inquisition didn't kill nearly as many people as the fighting between the Catholics and the Protestants. And in France, it was especially intense. It's all mixed up with politics. Brajabihari, he told me he read a book called The Bad Popes. There's a book called The Bad Popes. At some period in history, some of the popes, he used to introduce people to my nephews. They're actually his sons, but he can't say that. And then he'd make them bishops, and very powerful, because they had a lot of secular power also. There was the Holy Roman Empire, which was based in Germany, but they were under the Roman Catholic Church. And they had to bow to what the Pope said. They had to do what the Pope said. A very, very powerful position, which is one reason why Martin Luther's Protestantism caught on, because they didn't want to be under Rome, and they didn't want to send money to them either. The local German powers that be. But I thought of that despite all of that, something good came through. Overall, if you go to Italy and you see all the whole country is a big art museum with beautiful churches, every one of them full of paintings, God inspired. And something came through despite all of the bad history. And even there's so much disillusionment with the Catholic Church because of all the child abuse and this and that, but I think it would be unfortunate if the whole thing was just to collapse, because even widespread misbehavior, but something very good is there also. It's a good force for goodness in the world overall, I would say. There's some sense of God consciousness. Without any sense of God consciousness, people just become totally, totally animalistic. At least as long as people are Catholics or in Poland, there'll be a sense of we should have families and be responsible. That's hardly there in England now. because they became so, I wouldn't even say atheistic, they're just apathetic to religion altogether, just no interest in religion. There's no moral compass. So it definitely has its very good side. In some ways it can make it difficult for preaching also, because they become fanatical against us and this and that. Okay, Hare Krishna. All glories to Srila Prabhupada. Ayana must be getting like that also. What's that? We could say if Jesus is predicted in the Bhavishya Purana, then Jesus was also a Hindu. Although there's no word Hindu when this is all coined. What does he say, Suhag Goswami?
He says that a certain Indologist who calls Bhavishya Purana late, recently composed, suggests that Adam and Havyavati are characters drawn from the biblical Adam and Eve. That Bhavishya Purana is late is speculation.
Yeah, Indologists, everything they say is speculation. We can't take what they say very seriously at all. Hare Krishna. Gracias.